Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie the Sulk and JC.
The chemical, chemical, disgusting, 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 the flag.
And it starts right now.
So, welcome back to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing. Let's get the Weather Channel.
No, let's do something else first. So I shave.
Oh, here we go.
I didn't last notice week. This.
I shave. I put a line down. We both are kind of have beards and stuff. I shave.
This yeah. True.
New me.
New you.
Of course. Now you show up this week and you've shaved.
Sean, I'm Sean.
Like, can you let me have anything? Like,
no.
can I just be the guy who shaved for like a month?
Nope.
Can I have any real estate
I'm
to myself?
The guy who shaved.
First joke of the day.
First
joke of the day.
I like that one.
You look good. You look good.
You both do.
Thank you.
You both look
thank
younger.
Because I think at our age, one of the depressing things is the beard now comes in white, so
yeah.
It's not like, oh, there goes an urbane man or a chic guy. It's like, oh, there's an unkempt old man who no one takes care of. No one's known his name for 15 years, and he's clearly spiraling, and he doesn't care because what's left to live for? It just doesn't look good.
That's a great point.
Either.
That's a great point. You know, I first of all, yes, I didn't want to let you have an inch.
Oh.
Not the inches we need.
Who am I,
all
tall?
Hey, everybody.
Oh, my God.
5 minutes in the angry inch. So when my beard starts to grow horizontally out of the neck. That's when it gets trouble. It gets very rabbinical as we head into the high holy days.
Start growing
so
your pages.
Yeah, I had to get rid of it. So
yeah, particularly ever since you copied me with the glasses, then the beard does look rabbinical.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
right.
Well, you know, for 20 years I had the glasses, and then you just mm-hmm. decided, oh, I'm going to take that.
Well, the funny thing is, I was getting headaches, and I was like, what's wrong? And then, of course, my eyes were going. So all I did was get CVS readers, which
yeah.
these are.
Yeah.
And I wear them all the time, which is apparently terrible for your
yeah.
eyes.
Yeah.
So I don't just wear them for reading. I just wear them constantly.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'd probably need to go to an actual ophthalmologist.
All they do is they hold two or three completely indistinguishable options in front of you for lenses
yeah.
and force you to choose.
Yes.
Yeah.
Between lateral things that have you just doubting yourself the second
yes.
you go, can I see the previous one, please?
Yeah. Like, yeah. That was a very funny Family Guy cutaway where Seth, it was like a sequel, a Disney sequels are getting bad, and it was like Jafar needs glasses. And it was Seth was Jafar in one of those eye machines, and he's like, okay, number one or number two? He's like, I guess number number two? You know, and they're like, number two or number three. He's like, you want me to show him again? Yeah, show him again. You know,
that's exactly what happened.
That's Family great. Guy,
long and drawn out.
Yeah.
But speaking of long and drawn out, you guys have been prepping, hurricane prepping, filling the bathtub with water, getting the shelters ready and back, getting ready to live in the pool. So, Goldie, JC, you guys are out there. Tell me what you are the hell you are living through right now.
Oh, my God. It was nothing. Goldie, what did you do to prep?
So, I heard about this 6 days ago.
Yeah.
I'm hesitant to even say how much emergency food I have because someone will remember, and then when there's a real emergency, they'll come and kill me.
Yeah, you got the potato
Suffice
stick.
It to say, I have prepped for disaster my entire life, and I'm well equipped to go off the grid for a year.
Oh, a year. Ooh. Wow, I'm jealous.
Yeah, so I moved stuff around. I'm zip tying my furniture, my outdoor furniture. You know, in my head, I'm like strategizing ways to cook the dog and drink the pool. this is just everything now. Like, I think I'm one 9/11 away from becoming Dennis Miller or like some Trump person because the fury over just how many times are you going to wind me up?
Yeah.
For like the storm's coming. Mark Zuckerberg's going to fight Elon Musk. Like, like every day there's something that's going to happen that's like going to rock my world. Right. And then there's a new COVID variant and it's in the wastewater. So you better look out. We're running out of morgue trucks. Like it's just all this stuff that's supposed to happen. I'm walking around this morning. I'm walking the dog. There's not even a puddle.
Yeah.
Like, yes, it rained. There was zero wind. And you go, here's two conflicting narratives. Here's one narrative. The city and Mayor Karen Bass did such a wonderful job of preparing that the sanitation crews in advance cleared all the dead leaves and verified the system so that everything operated as a city should.
Ooh, that's yeah.
And that
that's
the damage
point.
Was minimized and we don't even realize the extent of the storm. That's narrative
one. There you go.
Narrative two, it was total bullshit.
Yeah, like most storm preps, I feel
I
like.
I think I know which one you're landing on.
I don't know, but you kind of go, it rained. It seemed like there was a lot of rain at one point.
At one point. And then I would look out and look at the trees, and there was none.
There was
even, no movement. There's
no wind at all.
For a hurricane, you know? It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't understand how it's 2023. Suppose we can do all these things, but like... No one knows the weather, and even as it's happening, you go, well, I'm going to go on Twitter, or I'm going to go on and look at the TV, and like, no one knows what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they were like, a highway in Santa Clarita collapsed, and then they showed the clip, and it was like one tiny section of pavement on the side of the road went like, it just kind of dropped down a little
collapse.
Bit, and you go, that's not a freeway collapse.
No.
Like,
yeah,
stop trying to wind me up.
Yeah,
like, I'm wound up. I'm ready for the fucking disaster.
Yeah.
Where is it?
Did you feel the earthquake, Goldie?
Well, so, there was this earthquake on top of everything, and I was talking to the people next door, and they said, a half hour before the earthquake, our dog was just kind of going crazy. His ears were pinned back. He was running in circles, and I was like, my stupid dog, a half hour before the earthquake, was just trying to get in the kitchen like he always does to climb up on the stove and lick the skillet.
My dog was just trying to eat its own dick like it always does.
So, I think we're going to be fine out in L.A.
Yeah. Okay. All right, good.
I knew it was going to be bullshit when I spent $480 last week to get my outdoor sprinklers fixed.
Yeah. Oh, God. Now everything's watered. Yep.
Yeah, everything's watered for 9 months.
Wasted. All right, well, while we have a second
I was
here,
hoping that your new home would wash away before you ever moved.
Well, we don't know.
I guess I'm never that lucky.
It may have. We don't know. We're not there yet. But while we have a minute, I want to tell you folks listening that today we're going to be talking to Andrew Goldberg, Family Guy, Big Mouth. We're excited for that. Next week, we have Jay Farrow.
Woo-hoo!
Is coming in here. I'm sure if we twist his arm, maybe he'll do a couple of impressions.
I hope so.
And, he's been actually writing on Family Guy with us for the last year as a consultant. So it's been really nice getting to know him. He's such a cool guy. So
super nice.
We're excited to talk to him next week. And Goldie, we've been bandying this idea about and I want to just get it out here on the record so we'll actually do it. We've been talking about, and JC, maybe you can, if you want to join us for this, you're more than welcome. Goldie and I have been talking about getting off our phones for a week and just seeing what that's like. Now, obviously, we can discuss the parameters of that. I don't think it's realistic, especially when you have, you know, a husband or a family or whatever, to not like get texts and phone calls.
It's not realistic to do the thing you just said.
No. I'm much more targeting social media.
Just get off
I'm targeting,
social media.
I'm targeting.
We don't
Instagram.
Open an app or a browser, maybe.
There you go.
I think I can do that.
All right, you don't have to commit right now.
What about
you can
like
think
crossword
about
puzzle app?
No. That's an app.
I have
app.
To do it in a paper. Ooh,
yeah,
okay.
You can do
you
it in a paper.
Print out the puzzle.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, that's exciting.
Seems fair.
Okay.
God
okay.
forbid you don't put ASP in a three-letter
I know.
Square
for a week. NYPD Blue Star Morales. Yeah. Esai. Lots of vowels.
Moisi. Alu.
That's funny. That's perfect.
All right. So I don't know when we're doing that, but that's on the horizon. And now it's been said aloud.
Yeah,
so
we're getting off heroin at some point.
We're going to do that after the app thing. We'll see how the app thing goes. Heroin will be next.
No, maybe we just do heroin during that week.
Yeah.
It'd be a perfect week because we're not accountable. And then we'll like just tell you, like, hey, here's why it's so popular.
Yeah. And like our listeners, we can nod off right here on air. I hear that's what happens. Speaking of that, by the way, I'll just throw in a little thing. Painkiller on Netflix.
Oh.
Very good.
So don't spoil it, but the painkillers are bad.
You just said don't spoil it. So how could I possibly say?
Netflix.
No, I just, you know, I like to know nothing going in, and they're going to say it's not the best thing to happen.
Well, I don't want to spoil
it. Wait, is it a docuseries?
No,
scripted?
it's a dramatic series, 6-part series.
No one involved was corrupt, right?
No, all very above board. Okay. They handled everything right, and it was just bad luck. Matthew Broderick plays Dr. Richard Sackler, which feels like sort of an anti-Semitic hate crime when you watch it. But Matthew Broderick now just always looks like fat Ferris Bueller. That's it. Like, it's just,
I know, forever.
I mean,
forever.
It's a miracle they haven't done Bueller Jr. and that he's the dad and the son is whatever.
Oh, that's...
You know.
We got to do that. Few things we got to do. We got to do the Firm series. After you mentioned the Firm series, and we'll talk about this off air because it's kind of boring. I have
Just put it on air like we always do.
I have 3 seasons arced out.
This is weird.
I have a light arc for 3 seasons.
This is very odd because it foreshadows my top 5.
Oh no, you have to watch The Firm. I'm mad already.
I've already seen The Firm. What are you talking about? Did I say I've never seen it?
Well, those are films we're avoiding is the top 5, right?
No, mine for the topic. Oh. It's foreshadowing my topic.
Okay, all right, you're getting way ahead of us, JC.
I know, but it's just so
way
weird.
Way ahead of us. That's very Asian student of you to get way ahead like that.
I was that nerd who did that too.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, we've bullshat enough. Let's get in to Johnny Jokes.
From Hollywood, it's still above ground and above the waterline. Here, Ronnie.
That was so good.
Underwater effects. I like it. We're splurging on the VFX budget. SFX, I would say. All right, here we go. Well, as we've been talking about up top, Tropical Storm Hillary finally made landfall and battered Southern California. And in true LA fashion, residents are asking if they can have the storm with oat milk instead of batter.
Ooh.
And also, it's affecting the strike. Striking actors marched in the rain, making SAG-AFTRA SOG-AFTRA.
Oh. Hey, everyone. Oh, hey.
And while the
premise is not true.
I know. Well, now I know that. Now I have the information that I would have needed a couple days ago when I wrote this.
False.
And while the storm is dropping record amounts of rain, predictably, Hillary underperformed in Orange County.
Oh.
And here's next story. Let's get away from the storm. The FDA has approved a new spiral-shaped tampon. Yeah. But I'm not too sure about the marketing line. Whether you have one or not, you're screwed. And Elon Musk, we've heard of him. Elon Musk said that X, nay Twitter, will be eliminating the block function in the weeks to come. Giving credit where credit is due, Musk claims that he got the idea from the New York Jets.
That's a Johnny. That's a good one.
And finally,
a
Japanese pop star, Shinjiro Atai, has come out as homosexual. Fans said they knew he was geisha when his Shinto was covered in kamikaze. Hey, everyone. Johnny 2, take it away.
All right. Well, you've all heard about the giant rains in L.A. Yeah, it was so bad.
How bad was it?
Oh, sorry. It was so bad, Mayor Karen Bass advised all mall looters to take kayaks. Yeah, and even celebrities took extra precautions for the storm. Nicole Kidman secured her face with zip ties. Okay.
You stepped on your own joke.
Yeah. President Biden is vacationing in Lake Tahoe this week. The president says it's nice to take a break and enjoy some fresh mountain ground.
He keeps falling.
And meanwhile, former President Trump skipped the Republican debate, giving voters a chance to hear from some new, fresh voices who also want to hang Mike Pence. And finally, we'll end on a norm here. Well, tickets to Burning Man are selling at less than face value, and organizers are blaming weather, electronic music, and annoyance at influencers. Yeah. And also, maybe people are tired of paying good money to see hippies' dicks.
Oh, that one could only be a norm. Hippies' dicks. That's the phrase that pays. Oh,
it's a little bit derivative of your unused dicks from the Harvard joke several weeks back.
I would not even remembered that. No. Did not find it derivative at all. Dicks are...
Universal.
They're open game. Open season on dicks.
Unused dicks, hippies dicks.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Oh, folks, we're excited today. We're talking to a show creator, our old co-worker, Mr. Andrew Goldberg is here. Andrew cut his teeth on Family Guy for, I want to say, like 7 or 8 seasons he was there. Longer, if you count his time as an assistant, which we'll get into as well. And then he left us, and we said, haha, what an idiot. And right away, he created the biggest hit animated show of the last decade, Big Mouth, the Emmy-winning Big Mouth.
Woo-hoo!
So we are excited to welcome today Mr. Andrew Goldberg. Andrew, thank you so much for being here.
Welcome.
And how does it feel to have so thoroughly lapped everyone?
I do not feel that way. I feel... It's so funny you asked that, because recently we were going through something, like it was getting my daughter into seventh grade, and there was and it worked out. And at one point, my wife Colleen afterwards said to me, like, I knew it was going to work out as soon as you got involved, because Andrew gets whatever he wants.
Oh,
and that, like, and I was like, that's insane. That's like, because that's like diametrically opposed to my point of view of myself. Like, right. I do not think of myself that way. And, but like, I guess on a certain level I do, but I don't know. That's not how I drift through life.
Right. But maybe it's because you're tenacious.
Oh, wow. Maybe.
Oh, yeah. 11-acious. You should have instant. You should have instantly asked her for some sex thing that you've been wanting for years. She's like, Andrew gets what he wants.
Right. Shit.
Shit.
Whatever you want to.
How do I go back to that?
So let's start by going back in time to White Plains.
White Plains,
New York. You grew up, we had Nick Kroll on a few weeks ago. I know you were good buddies with him growing up, but were you guys were in different towns, but you knew each other. So how did you first meet him? How did you come to get to know Nick?
Nick and I met in first grade. We went to school together at Solomon Schechta.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned that school.
a very Jewish school in a very Jewish place in a very Jewish state.
That's like living inside a bagel.
No, literally, like, our school, like, if you didn't have a yarmulke,
bagel shape.
you'd have to be wearing a yarmulke. And if you didn't have a yarmulke, you had to go to the office and pick up one of those, like, you know, black, like, folded yarmulkes. Like,
generic.
So full of dandruff.
That's
all. So many of them.
Disposable. Oh, yeah.
That's how Jewish the school was. But yeah, Nick and I met in first grade, and he was kind of like he's portrayed in the show, like this tiny little big mouth, super confident kid that was just like all lips and forehead and just like had no fear. And Nick is much taller than me, because I'm the same height I was when I was 12. At that time, I was like this like big, like oafy, doofy kid with incredibly thick glasses. And,
awesome.
We just quickly, I don't know, became friends. We thought the same things were funny, and we made each other laugh. And
that's key.
Yeah.
That is key.
Yeah. Did you have like a New York Knicks yarmulke? Or like the one, because that always felt like such a bad, like a invalid workaround to me. Like I like God, but I also like the New York Rangers.
Right. No, they were also like back then, this was like the 80s, they were like the stiff kind of like, I must have been fake suede.
Yes.
Like, with like the puffy paint, like was what the Knicks design was, like a total like do it yourself home. Oh,
it's such a cynical cash grab by the Knicks. They're like, we can sell some of these. I think I'm getting the sense. It's funny when I hear about, so Solomon Schechter obviously is a Jewish school, and when I hear about that, of course my first reaction is, oh God, that sounds terrible. But then I instantly go to, well, it's the opposite of spotlight. Like nobody is, nobody's touching anybody.
Oh yes, it was a very sexually safe school. Yes. I can honestly tell you, I got zero action at South Manchester. I promise you.
My first thought hearing about it is that Schechter, Solomon somehow tricked Schechter into putting his name first, even right. though alphabetically. It doesn't work.
Interesting. I always thought that Solomon Schechter was a guy named
Yeah,
Solomon
just
Schechter.
One guy. There's not oh. one guy?
I think it's one guy.
I just assumed it's like Barnes and Noble.
Or okay. like Simon and Schuster.
There's no way to ever find out.
No, we can't possibly.
There's no
Google
resource.
So I have a strange connection to White Plains, which is my mom got remarried in 2009 to an Orthodox Jewish fellow.
Oh, and they live.
Yes. Oh, that was some fun years. So they lived for a time in the White Plains area, as many of them do. And my mother went in and got botched surgery that put her in White Plains Hospital.
Uh-huh. And that's where I was born.
Okay. Wow. Well, we have a vow now in our family to never go there again.
Because I don't plan to go back either. So.
Good. They botched her surgery, and she was in that hospital for quite a while, a couple of months. And I came back to visit her for a very, very long time. And obviously, it's sad and it sucks. You know, hospitals are no fun, and your mom's there. It sucks. But the greatest Chinese food restaurant was right across the street. Little hole in the wall place, and I'd always be like, Mom, I'm just going to sneak out for a minute.
Oh my God.
And I'd be like just eating a giant plate of boneless spare ribs. Oh, heaven. So White Plains holds an interesting...
silver lining.
An interesting place in my heart. A pork lining.
Oh my God.
But yeah, we grew up in separate towns, but we went to school together every day.
Yeah. And so, yeah, no, it's clear you guys have a great friendship, and he's such a funny guy, and so are you. So that's awesome when people like that can sort of meet earlier in life, and then they get to work together out in L.A., which is insane. So you went to Columbia.
I did. Goldie and I are both Columbia boys.
That's right. Yeah. You guys are, you know, who's the more successful grad? Only time will tell. But
no,
you know.
And it's the younger one, of course. He's like I said.
You know what? I'm, and it's a podcast, but I'm a bald man. And yes. I do, and Goldie is a big deal in our community.
Yes.
So, you know, it's an honor to be here for that reason.
I'm the self-appointed spokesman of the community.
Yeah, you give us visibility, and nobody wants to look at us. And you say, "Damn it, look."
And also, no community is worse and less supportive.
Oh yeah,
and just more deserving of the shit that it gets than
bald
people.
Because nobody wants to raise their hand and be like, "I'm part of this community." Except
no,
for
I know. I basically I wrote a book about this, and it's like writing a book, like going like, "Hey, having fun being impotent." You know, like no one wants to bring that to the register and cop to it.
I was thinking about your book in the context of I know you guys interviewed Justin Halpern. Mm-hmm. Once and he did Shit My Dad Says, and he was talking about how like it's such a great gift book because you know it's a great thing to buy for anybody's dad on Father's Day.
Yes.
But like so you're going bald is not a great gift book because it's kind of like what am I gonna like give it to my son when he's 25? Like that seems cruel and unkind, which defeats the purpose of the gift. Well,
I will say I recently received a very nice email from someone who had given it to their parent who had cancer and their parent was enjoying it. So that felt good, but like to go in saying like this is a book for people who just got cancer is a funny gag gift.
Yeah,
it's like a little bit of a narrow window.
This is an opportunity. Right this is patient. An opportunity, Goldie. You can rope in if we rope in the cancer crowd. We're gonna be sitting pretty. We're gonna be sitting pretty on bald bucks.
Yeah.
So
but yes, Columbia. Sorry.
So Columbia, and now when you were at school. Did you have an inkling that you wanted to get into comedy? Did you do any kind of like comedy stuff or did you just go to like stand-up clubs in New York or any of that shit?
I mean, even like Nick and I, when we were little, even Like there, like we would like make weird videos in his house. Awesome. Like we were obsessed with old Mel Brooks movies, and Wayne's World was like super formative to us. And so we kind of thought of ourselves as like, we could be Wayne and Garth, right? And so like we would like make videos up in his bedroom. And then I remember distinctly showing like we made this video where we were a bunch of guys in a sports bar just talking shit and doing different characters. And then we showed it to his family and they looked at us like, you fucking weirdos, why are you like, go back upstairs away from us. So like even from then, and like we would like host the Purim talent show at Solomon Schechter. We were like, we were real like Solomon Schechter tens as performers. Yeah. and then in high school, I did like a public access show with my friend Dan, where we did like interviews and
that's very Wayne's World.
Very Wayne's World. We also, yeah. And this was pre-Jackass. We had our friend Dave Epstein used to. He'd come on and just punch himself in the face. And then one time we froze a big like sheet of ice and he smashed it over his head. I'm sure he must have gotten a concussion. Back then we didn't know. That's hitting yourself so in the head was a bad.
He got his bell rung. You'd be watching football. Yeah. Yeah.
That's so great. Having a buddy who will punch himself in the face is quality entertainment.
I think he works for the State Department.
More confident in our policies thanks to that. Well, so it's interesting that you talk about when you were younger with Nick making the videos and, you know, showing them to your family, because I had friends and we did that as well. We made like these little videos. I remember we made something called the Stupid Movie, and it was just a series of little sketches. And my friend wanted to be a director, so he was like in charge of it all. And we were very like, you know, proud of it and showed it to all our family and all that. And I remember a couple years later, I'm just casually leafing through a Mad magazine as a 14-year-old does. And he had stolen everything that we did in the movie from Mad magazine.
Oh, he busted.
It was like a weird, like, you know, a pan and a snap zoom in a movie.
Like,
where I'm like
the end of The Usual Suspects.
Yes.
Well done.
Yeah. Or just like the Shining when she's reading the same thing over and over again. Like, oh. So yeah, that was all lifted by my friend Chris Weston. Shout out to Chris Weston. Way to go.
I mean, since I was little, I was kind of doing that thing, but I don't know, like, you guys had this experience maybe too, like growing up on the East Coast, there weren't like a lot of people who like worked in show business.
No.
At least like people like had like real jobs. And so it never completely occurred to me that like it could be my job. And then when I graduated Columbia, I came out here to go to film school at UCLA. And I was in this program called the Producers Program, which I felt like I could sell to my parents, because producer sounds like almost like a businessman.
Yeah. Totally.
And so I was at this Producers Program at UCLA. And then my second year there, I took this sitcom writing class with this guy, Fred Rubin, who had written for like Alf and Family Matters and Night Court, which to me growing up, I thought Night Court was so fucking funny.
Yeah.
And he was describing this job where you basically sit in a room and eat snacks with 10 other people and make each other laugh. And I was like, well, that sounds like an outstanding job.
That's so well said. Yeah. That's exactly right. So
Can we just go back to Columbia? Because I want to ask you a question. Yeah. Columbia, there's very little comedy. Like the comedy at the time,
were,
I think, 2 years after me, maybe. I was 95, and what are you, like 97, 98 or something? 99? Oh, my God, 5 years.
I know, I look older than I am.
No, no. I did that. I did that as a form of self-protection. But, I mean, at the time, like, the funniest people on campus, you know, was this a cappella group, the Kingsmen. And it was like this horrible, they'd all wear like blazers and they were all chummy. And then they would do like SNL deep thoughts. And I loathed them with a passion. But did you experience any avenues toward comedy there that like maybe I was unaware of? Or because it was a very serious place to me.
So they're, yes, very, like, I remember when I went to visit it, like, people were, like, occupying the admissions building, like, protesting. And it was, like, it was a very serious place. And they, to this day, have no regard for, like, me or anything. Like, there's no,
same.
Like, to them, like Ang Lee and James Seamus were who they wanted you to be. They wanted you to be, like, an artsy, independent filmmaker. And yeah, no, it was weird because that's not where my sensibility was. But a friend and I, his name was also Andrew, we made a sketch comedy show for the Columbia TV station, which was like really just like an abandoned room with a bunch of equipment.
Yeah, the radio station was bigger, I would
say. Yes, yeah, the TV station was like, but the nice thing about the TV station was you could show up and be like, can I take this camera? And they're like, yeah, sure, why not? And so that was kind of where I found it. But yes, you're right. Columbia did not have a sense of humor.
Right. Yeah, yeah, it sounds like.
Or as my father would say, no sense of humor.
I'm glad you got to that. I meant to talk about that because we bonded over that. Like the Jewish pronunciation, it was sometimes just like, I think we had one run where we would talk about like the Metropolitan.
The museum.
Yeah, a huge museum.
Huge museum, and also a person is a human being.
Human. Yeah.
There's something so hilarious about that. And another thing that I don't know, this might be a Boston thing. It's definitely an Ashkenazi thing, which we all are, as my wife, who's Sephardic, points out to me all the time.
Yes.
Ashkenazis are like very inferior to the Sephardic Jews.
We all bleed sour cream and borscht.
Yes, exactly. But my retort to that to her is, who's Sephardic? But she doesn't like that at all. But in my family, there was a thing.
Anybody who's not Jewish who's still left.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you for sticking around. We'll get to other stuff.
Funny.
This isn't the first time we've had a triumvirate of Jews on here. But in my family, when they're doing like any of those little prayers that you do over challah or candles or whatever the fuck, they do this weird thing where instead of the letter T, they'll make it an S.
Have you ever heard that? Yes.
So yeah.
That's old people.
Yeah.
Old people.
Old people. Yeah.
And it is an older Jew flex where it's
Erosis.
Sort of like,
Erosis, yes.
Yeah.
But
in everything, it's like Baruch Esar Adonai. And drives tall crazy. So we all have that potentially in common. All right. So, but now you've come out to UCLA. You're in this producer program. How long after graduating from that did you hook up with Seth, and how did that happen?
So what happened is I was working, my first like full-time job after school was I was working at Fox at 20th Century Fox Studios, which I guess is now Disney.
It's just underratedly hilarious to have a master's degree and to be walking the halls of Fox.
It was like I had like an assistant job, like one of those headsets on the phone, scheduling, fucking doing rolling calls all day long. And it was hard work. But the people I worked for were really cool, good people. And they knew that I didn't want to be an executive, that I wanted to be a writer. And so they started introducing me to writers after I'd been there for a couple of years. And one of the people that they introduced me to was Seth. And this was like right before as Family Guy was coming back. Right. And like now knowing Seth as well as I do, the way I met him was perfect because it was like, I had a meeting with him. It was on a weekend day, and it was at like 11 o'clock, and I showed up at his house and he was in a bathrobe, clearly not expecting me at all. But let me into his house, and like we talked for a while and we got along decently. And then like unfortunately a couple weeks later, his assistant Keith Heisler got promoted to be a writer's assistant on American Dad. And then I came in and I took over as Seth's assistant largely because he didn't want to meet somebody else.
Yes. I think going with the theme of your life that started in school is, well, I'm not going to have anything sexual with him, so I can have him around all the time.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so non-threatening. That might be my secret. That's my secret weapon is nobody wants to fuck me.
Well, so you came at a very interesting time in Family Guy's history, and we both came kind of at the same time, because coming to Family Guy when it was brought back seems like a much different slash better experience than it would have been for the people who were there seasons 1, 2, 3, where it was like, we're canceled, we're back, we're canceled, we're back, we're canceled. So what was that an exciting job for you, or was it mostly terrifying?
It was both. I loved Family Guy already. Like, I was a huge fan of Family Guy. So to be Seth MacFarlane's assistant was like a dream to me.
Yeah.
But also, like I said, I was coming from this assistant job where I was like on the phone all the time, and my bosses like really wanted me in their face, telling them like who called, what they were supposed to read tonight. And with Seth, like, he does not want that. Like, he didn't want that at all. He wants you to leave him alone and keep everybody away from him. Yes. And I didn't know that at first. So, and nobody told me, including him. And so like at first, like, he was like this fucking guy. And then when I realized like, oh, you just want me to leave you alone and keep everybody, like, oh, that's much easier. I can do that. Because you should have told me I can do that. So there was that.
Was there any sense of frustration? Because, you know, I was a page at SNL. Like, you said it was a dream to be Seth MacFarlane's assistant. Yeah. And, when I got the job as a page at SNL, I was like, this is amazing. I'm at the desk, the legendary 8H desk. Mm-hmm. But it quickly turned to frustration because I knew I didn't want to be a guy in an NBC blazer leading Harvey Weinstein to his VIP seat. Yeah. I wanted to be a writer, and wondering,
you were given that job because you were safe, because they knew you didn't
want to do it. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, to my great credit, which no one ever gives me, I didn't know who Harvey Weinstein was, and someone yelled at me because I didn't lead him to his seat right. I was right. But did it, like, how quickly did it turn, or did it, you know, maybe it didn't for you, maybe you have a better coping capacity, but did it turn from like, well, I'm near what I want to be doing, but I'm not doing it. I'm watching other people doing it, knowing I can do it. Did you go through any of that, or was it more?
I mean, it took me a couple of years to get to that. I think also, I mean, the other nice thing, like what Alec is describing about like the craziness of Family Guy when it first came back, is like, it was good for me in that it was like a story that a show got canceled and brought back, which happens more often now, but back then it really didn't.
Right.
And everybody wanted to talk to Seth. And meanwhile, Seth was like very focused on making the show because he rightly felt like, oh my God, I have a second chance to do this thing. I'm going to nail it. And so people would ask to interview him and he would kind of decline, and they'd be like, well, can we send in a bunch of questions for like Stewie or Brian. And so Steve Callahan was right answering those questions, of course, because it was extra credit and Steve. Yeah.
Hi, Steve.
And he was doing it for free, you know, and at some point I was like, hey, can I help? And he and Steve was awesome. He was like, yeah, totally.
Oh, was he an assistant then? Or was he a writer?
He was a writer. Okay. Yeah, Steve was a writer. And he, I'm sure he was happy to have somebody kind of help him out.
Yeah.
And we would split them. And then eventually he was like, you can do these. And I would like answer those questions. And the nice thing was like somebody had to read them before they went to GQ or wherever.
Right.
And so like Seth or David Goodman or Chris Sheridan, like, would just have to read them to be like, okay, pick this one, and this one. They're funny. And I think that throughout the course of that, they saw like, oh, Andrew can write the show. And I got the chance to write a couple of freelance scripts when I was still Seth's assistant.
This is a good moment to sit on here, because this is a key moment in any burgeoning writer's career. Is you're in the building, you're not necessarily doing exactly what you want to be doing yet, but then because of your own hard work and good work, you get a real opportunity to do something. As you said, you had the opportunity to write a Family Guy script. And I remember your first script, and I think you had another one, and then you got on staff. But your first script was really good. Like there's, you know, because we had to wade through, you remember Bone Cancer and Heart Attack, of course, famously.
Bone Cancer and Heart Attack.
I don't remember their names, thank God, and I would never say it now, but we gave these two very old writers, like, I don't know how somehow Seth got bamboozled into like giving them a script.
Yeah.
And they came in and wrote a script, Bone and it was just awful. And Seth drew a little, like, you know, sketch of them as Bone Cancer and Heart Attack, because they were both one was very gaunt and the other one looked like he was about to close.
We're so much closer to that phase of our career.
But also, this was like 16, 18 years ago. The chances that both of them are still alive are
zero.
Also, those drawings that Seth used to do, he had a knack for, first of all, you thought he was sitting there listening to you pitch jokes, but no, he was sitting there drawing like a version of you where it's like he went inside your soul and found the thing that you're most insecure about and was like, I'm going to base the drawing on this. And like, then like somebody would find it on the back of his, because he wouldn't even like hold it up and be like, look what I did. He would just leave it there for you to find and be like, look what I found, Andrew. Seth drew you. And it's like, oh God, I didn't think I was bald.
I remember your drawing, because we have now
I look like Bobby Hill.
You looked like Bobby Lee. Like he drew you as kind of Asian. I remember
he would have been very good.
Maybe
he would have been very good at war propaganda.
Oh my God! Yes.
Yes.
And then so then people find it on the back of his script, and what they do is they take it off and frame it and hang it in the room so you can see it every day.
Yes, we have a whole wall of those, and they're hysterical. The ones that jump out to me are like Gary Jannetty with his knee holding his knees
up
sitting down,
his eyes,
and Steve Callahan with his long legs, and he did one of me, and thank God he didn't draw me in profile, because it would have just been just a Nazi hate crime. But he just kind of drew me face on with like a joint in my hand and like a Red Sox sweatshirt. It was insulting, so cool. But also definitely like kind of an honor. Like
That's kind of, but that also was like a little bit of the experience of starting on Family Guy and getting promoted to the writer room. It was insulting, but also an honor.
Yes.
Whenever I try to like describe to people on Big Mouth, like where the vibe is very different, like what was it like starting at Family Guy? And my understanding is that it's softened a bit since then.
It has.
But it was like, the way I describe it is, imagine every time you leave the room, counting one Mississippi, two Mississippi, and then boom, a huge roar of laughter comes from the room that you've just left. And you know for 100% certainty that's because somebody just made a joke about you.
Yes.
And I say that not being like, oh, poor me. I'm like, because I did it too. I was on both sides of it. But that's just like, that's how we interacted with each other there. And you really had to have your like dukes up, like ready to punch back and like and block a punch. And then when I described to like my old friends or Family Guy, like, well, what's it like working at Big Mouth? I'm like, okay, imagine you're leaving work on a Friday and you shout out to Alec or Rich, have a great weekend, I love you. And then Alec shouts back, I love you too. And there's like no shame or like self-consciousness. And that's not to say that you guys don't love each other. Like, I mean,
Goldie.
They definitely
you guys love
each
Goldie.
Other.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah. You do.
Look how cute this is.
Why don't you leave the podcast for 5 seconds?
Yeah, I'll be right back.
Alec, turn around in your chair so Goldie can say that he loves you. But like, that's just like the difference between those two vibes is that like But yeah, yeah, Family Guy was scary. It was
well, I mean, one now you just couldn't do.
Also, right. Yes. Like, yeah.
You know.
Well, and also that's also the difference between millennials and Tom Devaney. Like,
yes.
You know, there's like a divide there age-wise that where in the older generations it's like, yeah, we, you know, we stormed the beaches at Normandy. You can take shit. Like, and you can take flack in the writer's room.
I love the idea of Tom storming the beaches in person. You guys go ahead. I'm right behind you.
And don't say June 6th. Oh, don't say. yeah, but that's a perfect description of, like, I cannot tell you. I think I now pee much more frequently because I held in so many pees in the Family Guy writer's room. You don't want to leave.
That's what, like, Danny Smith, you say, don't get out of the boat.
Yeah. Don't get out of the boat, man. So to get back to the writer part of this. So you wrote spec scripts. And as I said, it was clear, at least to me and clearly to the powers that be that were, that you could do this, like, because we weren't in the habit of, you know, when a script would come in, it wasn't just like, oh, we're going to take them on staff no matter what. It's like it had to pass a certain sniff test to get in. And I think one of the things, and I think it's perfect that you went and created something like Big Mouth, which is incredibly funny and very raunchy. And you have had that style. You had it when you first started writing at Family Guy in your first job. Like, I always remember you, even in a Family Guy room that was raunchy to begin with, you were further. Like, your raunchiness, and by the way, a lot of it got in the show, but it was like you were the one kind of like pushing the raunchy envelope and the stuff you pitched. So is that something where you grew up? And you were, and I know, having watched Big Mouth, and we'll get into talking about Big Mouth later, but I thought one of the interesting, you know, parts of Big Mouth was in season two. So there's the character that's clearly you, named Andrew, really pitched a while on that name. But so there's a moment where you have this sort of crisis of conscience almost, where you're like, is it possible to be like this horny monster almost and also be like a good person? So is that a struggle that you have had in your life? And do you feel like, oh my God, I'm kind of bad because I have these sexual impulses, but like, I really do think I'm a good person inside?
Yes. I love that, like, you picked out that one part, because to me, so much of the show, and especially so much of Andrew's character, is that central question is, can you be a horny perv and also be a good guy?
Yes.
Can you be those? And I like that, like, the hormone monster, his response is no. He's just a flat no. He's like, no. And he's like, no, and I know what you should be because it's what you naturally are. And it's disgusting freak. And no, I do think that for me personally, and I think just as like the big question of the show, it is that. It's like, can you be horny without being a creep?
is
kind of like the big trick. And like we at Big Mouth, every year we talk to this incredible sex education teacher. Her name is Shafia Zaloom. And the way that she puts it is, can you be a sexual person with authenticity and grace is kind of how she puts it, as opposed to, can you be a horny perv and still be a good guy?
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I do think that to me is like a big central question of the show, and even for my life. And I know that there are people who see the show and are like, this is fucking gross. Like, this is not, like, to me, like I feel like Big Mouth is very honest in that.
Yeah.
It's what it felt like to me. It's not what it was like. But it's what it felt like. And I think that, you know, for some people, it's just not for them, because they're like, it didn't feel like that for me.
Yeah.
And how do you avoid being in HR constantly? This isn't a joke.
Right.
Like, when you're talking about that stuff all the time, I mean, do you establish parameters at the beginning, or do you have along the way, do you, you know, little stepping stones for people? Like, if you don't want to talk about this, then, you know, you can get off the train, or like, how do you handle that?
So like you kind of start off with that. And it's a little bit like what Howard Stern does when he's interviewing somebody. Like he throws you so off guard by being so like overly honest. But like we would do that, which I don't know if that's OK or not. But
no, that's why, because yeah. Instantly I'm but hearing like, that and going, if I brought that up in an interview, yeah. I would then just be like, oh, my God, am I going to get a call?
But right. But so like we would, but it wasn't in the interest of making people uncomfortable or shocking them. It was in the interest of vulnerability. It was talking about like what our truth was when we were that age, which was yeah. that Nick felt like shit because he was watching everybody else go through puberty and he was still waiting and getting very impatient. And I felt like shit because I thought that I was this hairy fucking come spraying monster who had no control right. of himself.
Yeah.
And the people who were comfortable with that and would then like share their own kind of vulnerable truths, we knew were the people who were right for the show. Like I remember very distinctly Kelly Goluska, who's been a writer on Babe Mail since season one, and she created the spinoff with us. I remember we were talking about how in the first show we wanted to show Andrew's animated dick. And she was like, well, are you going to show a vagina at some point? And Nick and I were like, oh, and she was like, you have to. And we created the show with Mark Levin and Jen Flack, and Jen was there too. And she was like, of course we're going to show a vagina. And all the men were like, what? And but like, just the fact that like Kelly asked that question and insisted it was like, oh, this is our kind of person. And so I think like the answer to your question, Goldie, is just that like, the room is very vulnerable and accepting and non-judgmental, and it has to be, because you can't right. you can't like invite people in to like share the most horrifying things that happened to them when they were 12 years old and then be like, ah, like nobody would open their mouths.
Yours is way too
yeah.
weird.
Oh, whoa, wait, we said weird, not disgusting. Yeah. And so I think that it's just like a mood that you create where you're all kind of vulnerable and non-judgmental and, you know, the opposite of what it was like at family when I started.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think it's great to make the decision to show vagina. I think the suffragettes walked so that you could run.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the point of that whole anecdote. Yes. We're great men for showing a cartoon vagina.
Also, I would have to imagine, and you're describing a lot of this in the process of interviewing the writers before yeah. season one, uh-huh. but I would imagine, because Big Mouth was rare in that it was a show that was instantly successful, like an animated show that was instantly a hit and critics loved and kids loved and people laughed at, like it was just like a smashing success. So I would imagine that from that point, when you start to experience this success of this show you've created with your friend, then it's like, yeah, we're going to be doing this uncomfortable stuff in the writer's room now, and everybody's going to be on yeah. board with it because you're successful. And like success is the ultimate sort of aphrodisiac in Hollywood. So once something gets going and going well, then you're going to say like, well, we were right. We were right to do it this way. So did you feel kind of like justified or like validated in your point of view, like yes, we were right to be transparent, vulnerable and disgusting, we were right to do these things,
I guess, but it wasn't that immediate, because like also like, and you guys know this, with animation it takes so long to produce, and mm-hmm. especially like the way you guys do it on Family Guy is kind of rolling production where you're still producing the rest of the season as the first one airs.
Yeah. Right.
With us on Big Mouth, you have to produce all 10, translate them into 15 different languages, and then they all air at once.
Whoa.
And Netflix, they liked the first season, and they knew they wanted a second season. And there was a point at which we were like, if you guys want the second season to come out anywhere near a year after the first season, we have to start making it now. And it was before the first season premiere. Okay. And so they let us start making season two before season one came out. So like we had this really cool experience where we wrote most of the first two seasons in a vacuum before the show came out.
Oh, and, okay. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I didn't think a lot of people would, I don't know. I mean, I remember very early on, John Mulaney used to come into the room like 1 or 2 days a week during the first season, which is crazy to think of. But like, he at one point very early on was kind of like, who is this show for? And I was like, huh? Like, you know, like, I probably should have thought of that before. Yeah. But he was like, who is this show for? Because it's about kids, but kids can't watch it. And instantly I was like, oh my God, I've spent so much time and energy making a show for absolutely nobody.
That's a genius question.
But kids do watch it.
But yeah. And I think, you know, there were a couple of moments along the way before it came out where I like had an inkling that we were onto something. The first was like, this was before we even pitched it. I remember having a conversation with Mark and Jen, our partners, and they, at the time, their son, who's now like in college, was like 12. And so he was really like our kind of test subject for this whole thing.
Right.
And Mark was like talking about like the anxiety of puberty and like the hormones bouncing around. Like, is there a way to use animation to like, you know, express that? And I said, like, I was like, you mean like a hormone monster or something? And he was like, yeah, that. And later that That's day, great. I remember I was in my son's room, weirdly, on the phone with Nick, recounting this conversation to him. And as soon as I said the word hormone monster, Nick, just in the voice he uses today, goes, touch yourself, Andrew. And I was like, I almost dropped the phone because like, it was like, oh my God. Yeah, that's the guy. That's the guy who was in my head. And that's exactly what he said. And from there, like, it really coalesced around like using animation to express those things from puberty. So there was that moment. And then there was a moment when we were watching the first animatic where like, I remember like we got it and you're like, you're so nervous. You're like, oh my God, is this going to work? And we actually watched it. The four of us, me, Nick, Mark, and Jen, watched it the night before just to like see if it was okay before we screened it together with the whole crew. And I remember we got to the scene where Nick's character is asleep and 3 feet away, Andrew's hormone monster is convincing him to jack off next to his sleeping friend. And I'm watching this and first I'm like, oh God, I can't, like, I don't know if they're going to put this on anything. but then there was also this thing of like, I've never seen this on TV before. Yeah, and that's right. Always exciting. That's always good. Like, that's what, like, and I think that's one of the reasons people like the show right away is they'd never seen it. It was surprising and different. And I think that, you know, when like you're developing TV, like a lot of times, like people are chasing like the last thing that was a big success. Yes. Which I think is such a mistake because like when you think about the shows that really like people respond to, it's like surprise, like nobody was asking for a show about kids jacking off.
Well, you've successfully walked this tightrope where, you know, if you put yourself back into being 12 to 16, it's the thing that you know about that your parents don't know that you know about that you're going to secretly consume. Like, it was me and my friend driving 20 miles to a different town in my grandmother's Ford Escort to listen to a Two Live Crew cassette. So no one we knew would hear us listening to this filthy thing, where I think it's you captured that, but that's a very hard thing to pitch, where you go, I'm going to create something taboo that kids will watch, but their parents won't want them watching it, but they kind of will want them watching it because then they won't have to talk about it. and it's safe.
Yeah, and that wasn't like our goal at all. Like, I think we were just like, let's make a funny show. And then there was this thing where, like I said, like the show came out, like we were just finishing writing the second season and the show came out and it was like, people were like, this is the sex ed that I never had. And like, my kids watch it and then we talk about it. And then we had this thing in season three where we came back where like we had to outlaw the phrase, what are we saying? Because we were all suddenly so concerned about the messaging behind it. And that was important. But the truth is, like the first couple seasons, without thinking a lot about the messaging, we actually did a better job because we were just being honest. We weren't worrying about what each episode was saying thematically. We were just telling these stories.
That's a great point for all writers to listen to. I think if you know, as you say, if you get so hung up on like, what's our message? We need to have a message. What is it? As opposed to letting it just arise organically out of the funny situations and jokes that you're putting in there, it always feels kind of stiff. So,
but if you're telling people that, really, what are you conveying?
What do you mean?
If you tell people not to worry about their message, then what's really your message?
don't tie my brain in a pretzel.
But right? We were all like,
"That's that was Goldie's standing affirmative, you know, no prep response." To that.
This is why I'm so unproductive in writer's room.
No, so I mentioned in
that
your
was Goldie's way of saying I love you, Alan.
Yeah, there we go. I'll take it. Thank you, Goldie. So I sweet. Also think you're terrible. but, so now, are you guys, is the show nominated for an Emmy this year?
No, which okay. I honestly prefer because we when we get nominated, I always go through this experience where I'm like, we're not going to win. You know, the Emmy voters are not going to give a statue to the kids jerking off show.
yeah,
that's just not going to happen. And I always think that. I think that. And then we show up in the room and then like, as they're announcing the thing, my brain goes, maybe you won. and then we did, and I'm like, fuck, now I got to sit here.
Well, you know what's galling to me about the whole situation is that because, you know, Family Guy famously just never gets nominated. We were nominated way back when, but now it's like we wait for the nominations to come out, and it's always, you know, Simpsons and now Bob's Burgers. Right. And, you know, like one other show that you've heard of. And then it's always like the Seven Pinwheels of Gabby G. And I'm like, what the fuck? Where the fuck did this come from? Like, there are these always two shows on the periphery that I'm like, I've never fucking heard of that. At least nominate us. At least nominate us.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're in that zone yet, but God bless you if you never get there.
No, yes. No, there's always one show where you're like, what? I didn't know that was a show.
I've never heard.
Perhaps I should check it out. But
I know.
Yeah.
That's so you, I think in looking at it, you were writing on Family Guy from like 07, 08 until about 2015 or 16.
Yeah. I was Seth's assistant seasons 4, 5, and 6. And right. then I was a writer, I think like season 7 to 14 or 15.
Yeah. So yeah. You came in right around the time that the Giants wrecked the Patriots perfect season, which I'm sure makes you happy.
Yeah,
when you left Family Guy, as I mentioned, you know, I think whenever people leave the show, the people who stay on the show are kind of panicked and looking at each other like, he's an idiot, right? Yeah, he's dumb. Yeah, what an idiot. Yeah, he's what a moron. And then it was very fast after that Big Mouth got started. So was that like, when you left Family Guy, were you like, okay, I'm leaving because I want to make a show or I want to get something going somewhere else? Or were you thinking like, maybe I'll staff somewhere else?
No, I left Family Guy to do Big Mouth. We sold Big Mouth to Netflix while I was still at Family Guy.
Smart.
And Seth and Fox graciously let me out of my deal to go do the show. And I don't know if you remember, but I certainly remember this was right when you took over with Rich. I remember you and Rich telling me something along the lines of, if everything goes down in flames, you're welcome to come back. Which, whether you meant it or not, meant a lot to me. You know, you go into these things assuming that it's going to go down in flames just because most stuff does.
Most do, yeah. Yeah, well, anyway, you really knocked it out of the park. And by the way, we gave Goldie the same assurances when he would leave Family Guy. Anytime, baby, come on back.
No, it's a little scary to leave, especially for me, because it was my first job and I've been a writer there for 8 years, and it's a good job. And at some level when you leave, you're kind of like, what the fuck am I doing?
Well, you know, you mentioned that there's the Big Mouth spinoff. Is it's called Human Resources, is that what it is? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now that's in season what now?
That's, we did 2 seasons of that, and the second season was the last season of that. We for a while were doing this thing. It was really, really during the heat of the pandemic where we were basically doing 2 different series a year, kind of splitting the season because a lot of people wrote on both shows and a lot of artists worked on both shows.
Right.
And it was a lot of work.
But
also a lot of fun and really gratifying. And there are people who like really felt very kind of seen by human resources in a way that made us feel good.
That's awesome. Cool. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, Andrew, you've been very generous with your time, and you really did. Again, you came into Family Guy strong with your sense of humor, and you left even stronger. You just hit one out of the park with Big Mouth. It's such a funny show. It's like, as I mentioned, it's raunchy, it's hilarious, but it also it has a depth to it that you don't expect. I certainly did not expect when I went into watching it, that I found, incredibly satisfying. So you should be very proud of that, as I'm sure you are. Maybe not as proud as your parents are of you.
Before I go, do you want to hear about when my parents first saw the show?
Yes. Sure. I'm surprised they watched. I'm surprised they watched, but let's hear.
Okay, so this was before the show came out.
By the way, if we were still doing Family Guy, I would have said, no thanks. Anyway, yes. This has been a great episode. Yes.
That would have been lovely. But so this was before the show even came out. I had it on my laptop, and they were visiting from New York, and I think my wife, Colleen, encouraged me to show it to them.
Mom, Dad, gather around my lap.
Oh, yeah. So, like, and I was like, do you want to see it? And they're like, yes. Okay. So I put the thing on, and for like 4 or 5 minutes, they're laughing and enjoying themselves. And then we get to that scene that I mentioned earlier where young Andrew is jacking off next to his sleeping best friend, and the laughter stops. It's just silence for the next 19 minutes. I'm sitting there like all paranoid, because I'm like, no, you're like, relax. This is how your brain works. They like it fine. You're just freaking yourself out because that's what you do.
Right.
And I'm like, it's okay. You're fine. And then it's over. And they don't say anything. And finally, my dad says, I liked the Count Basie character, referring to the ghost of Duke Ellington.
Yes, of course.
Yes, of course.
And they can't get it right.
I'm like, okay. And then and they're leaving, and I'm still thinking to myself, like, you're overreacting. This was fine. And I remember Colleen closed the door, and she turns around and looks at me, and she goes, I'm so sorry. They hate it so much. That was so awful. And I was like, oh God, they did, didn't they? And she was like, they don't know anything. I'm like, but then I was like, oh, did I do something? Did I make something just so gross? And then she got mad, because she was like, and then she wrote them an email like, how dare you? Your only son, your only child pours his heart into something, and you can't even fake that you like it.
That's
Can I make a prediction, though? Yeah. Just based on like how I think what would have happened in my house is then, though, when it's successful, that becomes, right, we always knew.
Oh, yeah, no.
We always knew.
I think my mother has kind of come around to the thing of like, oh, it's like intense honesty, and that's what you're ingesting. And I think she can appreciate it for that. My father just appreciates the success. It's always like the woman who took my blood today was a huge Big Mouth fan. It's like,
huge
Big Mouth fan. And it's like, how did she know that you were had any relationship? Like,
it happened to come up.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure in your dad's mind it's like, they'll give me the real medical care.
Yeah, if they know my son's a big Hollywood Jew.
You have distilled not only the parent dynamic, but the wife dynamic perfectly. Yeah. Like, it was right, the minute after your parents leave, your wife going, oh my God, they hated it. And you're like, ah. And then
turned around
and yelled at them to create another problem with you and your parents.
No, then they tried to like, yeah, she won. It's like, how could you think we didn't love it?
That's all so funny. Yeah. So
only a
funny.
Non-Jew could write that email to your parents.
Oh, yeah.
That's why you go outside the faith when you get married.
I brought her into this.
Oh, is that true?
Yes. My wife is a convert. So, yes. So she had the wherewithal to really go with her parents in a way that a born Jew might.
Oh, that's awesome. What a great story. Well, Andrew, again, thank you so much for your time. It was great working with you. It was awesome talking to you today, and just continued huge success with Big Mouth. We love it.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And that means a lot to me, genuinely. I said, coming into Family Guy was terrifying, and for Alec and Goldie to say I'm doing okay, it means a lot.
You're doing better than us. All right, Andrew, thank you so much.
Yay.
All right, thanks, you guys.
Thanks.
Oh, God, that was fun. Talking to Andrew, former coworker, and now incredibly successful.
Yeah, we'll never see him again.
I know. He's already ghosted us. Gone. Yep. Gone from the Zoom. Gone forever. But now it's time to get into a portion of the show we like to call Top 5.
Top 5.
Oh, we sound great. Goldie, this was your topic. Tell the folks what it is.
So these are the top 5 movies you've been avoiding seeing. And I don't mean that these are like historic good movies. You've heard about them. And for whatever reason, you've just decided. It's not that you can't see. It's just like, you know you should see them, but you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
This could have been a top 20 for me, by the way.
Same.
I know. The list is very long.
So I just took a shot at it. Here we go. Number 5 for me of movies I'm avoiding seeing. Number 5. The King's Speech.
Ooh, the King's Peach, yes.
Yeah. I know it's good. There was kind of that time about a decade ago, there were a few different movies where the whole story was, will this British person read from a prepared statement? Like the Queen was basically that, and it's like, I don't really care.
I thought it was about produce, the King's Peach.
Yeah. Number 4, Baby Driver.
Oh, that's good one.
Yeah. Supposed to be good. I know he's wearing the headphones and driving.
That's Gosling, right?
Yeah.
Is it? I don't even know that. I mean, I remember the name.
Yeah. It's the DVD screener has been sitting gathering dust under my TV for a decade at least. Number 3, I will never see this movie, Gone with the Wind.
Oh, we have crossover.
Yeah, I'll never have the 9 hours it's going to take.
It's 3+.
Number 2, great lines. Technically, I'm cheating a little bit because I started this movie and then I just have decided I will never finish it. Terms of Endearment.
Ooh. Oh,
you're nuts. That's a great movie. Hilarious.
There's a guy in it named Flap. I was out. No one's named Flap. How am I supposed to? What reality are we in where someone's named Flap and then there's not just an hour of the characters going, wait, so his fucking name is Flap? That's what he's called.
Hilarious.
Well, once you get past that, it's a very.
Didn't.
It's a one.
His name's Flap.
Acted.
Pause. Search.
Eject,
new movie.
Eject BCR.
Yeah. And number 1, and you know this, I've brought this up on the podcast before, the number 1 movie I'm avoiding, I'm determined to never see it, Star Wars.
Oh, yes. You have discussed this.
I can't say that now in your life that you should watch Star Wars, because I actually don't think you should. But
it's way cooler now to not have watched it.
Terms of Endearment is great. Of all the movies you mentioned, that's the one I'm going to hone in on. I think Gone with the Wind is great, too, but Terms of Endearment is a must watch.
And I think Baby Driver, that's Ansel, whatever, Elgort.
Oh, Ansel Elgort.
Drive, I think, is the one you're talking about. With
yes. Ansel Elgort's name is like you spilled a Scrabble tiles. That's all it is. All right. Here are my top 5 movies I've been avoiding.
Okay.
Number 5, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh, I love
it. It was good.
Avoiding. I love that movie.
I saw it once, never thought about it again.
I don't know. I don't. Something about it. I'm just like, okay.
There could be a whole Jim Carrey list of this.
Oh.
Wow.
I feel like I've seen most of it. Although, actually, I didn't see that other one, the Andy Kaufman one, and I was like, I don't want to.
Being married to a Canadian, you got to watch them all.
All right. Number four for me. Children of Men.
I've never seen it either. I hear people say
that it's great.
Is there Children of Lesser God?
Yes, that's a different one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Children of Men was
double feature of
Children of Men. Children of Men is Clive Owen. It came out in like 2006. Yeah, and it was dystopian, and people say it's great and rough. Everybody says, oh, it's tough. I'm like, yeah, I don't want that.
I feel like in my mind, that's also conflated somehow with District 49.
Oh, I can see that.
That wasn't the number. It was District 9, maybe.
Maybe 9,
nah,
yeah.
I don't know. It was all just like, things are going to get really bad.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And it's always like centered in like somewhere in South Africa. All right, number three, Whitnail and I. Which so many people swear up and down, you know, it's actually my favorite comedy.
What?
It's actually my favorite
comedy. I've never heard
of
this.
Time.
What is it?
It's a British movie from the mid-80s, I want to say. It stars that...
Whitnail. Okay, got it.
Yeah. Everybody swears by it. And I cheated like you. I watched like the first 10 minutes. I was like, I can't do this. It's
to me, that's
not...
Blackadder. Would be like, you know, Blackadder is a funny thing. I'm like, I don't know what Blackadder is. It sounds like a bad Marvel movie.
Well, I like Blackadder. My dad used to show me those. He had them on VCR. And it's Rowan Atkinson. You know him?
Oh, that's
like,
where he came from.
Yeah, yes. Mr. Bean.
Oh. Right. And he's very funny. And it's and Hugh Laurie, Dr. House.
What? That's where they came from, is Blackadder?
They're from the 80s, early 80s. That's the show. It's a TV show, not a movie.
Right.
Number two, with a Goldie connection here, Chicago.
Oh,
I will never see Chicago. I don't care that it won Best Picture. I know that I'm going to hate it.
Same.
And number one, Avatar. Never saw it. Don't want to.
Okay. Well,
good choice on your part.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. My top five. Number five is Unforgiven.
Mm. That's such a good movie.
I'm sure it is, but I'll never see it.
Come on.
Number four, Gone with the Wind.
Yep.
Also great.
Number three, Annie Hall.
Oh, wow.
That's anti-Semitic. That's a hate crime right there.
Looking right at you as she said it.
I know, really. I don't know why.
It's just like that marriage thing of, I know this is going to make you mad and I want to see how.
Yep.
Because it's funny. It's funny when you get mad. Okay. Yeah. Number two, As Good as It Gets.
Yeah. Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, good. And number one, I think this is kind of blasphemous. I don't know why I resist watching this. I know I would love it. The Lion King.
Oh, I mean, it's for kids, but it's...
Is it?
It is great.
I feel like
it's
every adult's like, it's amazing. It's so good.
It's a great Disney movie, but it's... to me, I have Beauty and the Beast and Moana are a little higher than Lion King for me, but I thought Lion King was great.
Okay. I've never seen those either. Okay.
All those movies are just time to look at my phone.
No, not in the week when we're not allowed. All right. So that was a great list. Very fun to think about. As I said, it could have been a top 20. JC, you're next week. What do we got?
Yes. Top five shows you'd want rebooted with a twist.
Whoa. Hmm. Okay.
Is that too much? I could change it.
Nope.
Wait. I can do that.
Okay.
I could do that.
That's how you guys were foreshadowing the my top five anyway.
All right, now that I've got my voice back, let's end the show, as we do every week, on a high note.
Wow, it felt longer.
It does seem longer, right?
Yes.
Even you reacted to it. All right, mine's very quick. I'm going back to my roots with this one for this high note. My high note this week is the Red Sox 8-1 against the Yankees this year. 8-1. And the Yankees are on an 8-game losing streak, and they lost 3 in a row to us. They're as shitty as they were back in the early 90s. I love it.
All right. Goldie?
My high note is, as much as I carped about it, just getting the rain was great, and we went out swimming in the middle of the storm, which was very fun. One of my favorite things to do is to be in water during water.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, it in my mind, when we get rain, I'm always like, well, that's like 2 more weeks. We won't die from a fire. So.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
True.
Good.
That's lovely. True.
Good high note.
My high note, besides last night's tennis final with Novak Djokovic and Carlos Alcaraz, is just to shout out Jason Rutkowski for an email he sent a little over a month ago. I should have done it earlier, but he just said some very nice words, and I'll leave it at that. And it's, you know, sort of been riding it, getting me through negative comments on YouTube and stuff.
Oh,
and I'm like,
Jesus Christ.
I know, I'm sensitive, okay?
I know, but you, yes. You know, the more you mention it, the more people are going to say it.
It's okay. It's okay, okay. Because I have to, come to grips with it. I have to like find a place where a healthy mental space in it, because I can be two things. I can be the person who produces this show and makes it happen. And I can also be the person that laughs at everything that everyone says, you know, and
yes,
not be
can.
Insulted by that. Like, why am I being insulted by this? So
no. And as we've said before, many times,
you don't have to
don't ever stop doing that. Thank God that you laugh like that.
You're
or
the
else
glue that holds this thing
fucking
together.
Dead. All right. Well, that was a fun show. Fun talking to Andrew.
Yeah, he's great.
Always fun talking to you two, who are awesome.
Same with you.
So thank you both, and thank you all for listening. And we will be back with Jay Farrow next week.
No, we won't.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.
I can't, I don't know why.